Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to part two of our awesome interview with Sean Tubbs. I think you're going to like it. Let me know, and thanks for listening. How has the size and scope of working with Carrie the Tour, how has that changed over the last 10 years?
Well, the Storyteller Tour was, it was stupid, man. I mean, because I, you know, she was opening for Paisley, Brad, when I started the gig. And each tour, the stages have gotten a little bit more crazy as she's grown as an artist. And she's also grown as a performer. So there's things that she kind of visualizes and wants to see in production. So between her and the label and, you know, managers and producers, things just have always ramped up. But once we got to the Storyteller Tour, that was crazy. When I finally saw what I'd only heard, you know, conceptualized, when I finally saw it, I was like, this stage takes up a hockey rink. It's in the round. It takes up the whole hockey rink. There's a little bit of room for standing, but for the most part, this is a hockey rink. And if you go under the stage, it literally looks like this absolutely gorgeous NASCAR frame.
Wow, that's like, wild.
It's just insane, the build on the stage. But, you know, you've got, you know, the center of the stage. Carrie, I think the tallest, I think Carrie went up 25 feet in the middle platform. And then the platform around that one, concentric platform, went up, I think, what was it, 10 feet, something like that. And then there's another platform around that in a circle that not only goes up and down, but it goes up and down in quarters. It's kind of hard. You would have to see it, but it goes up and down in quarters. I don't know why I'm moving my hands because you can't see me moving my hands. But it goes up and down in quarters, but it also spins 360 degrees. So, and that's just the center.
This is why concert tickets are $1,000 when people piss and moan. I mean, what do you think it costs to build that, let alone schlep it around? And
I can't even imagine. And then you get out to the outskirts of the hockey rink of the stage, and things go up and down out there as well, all the way down below the stage and all the way up above the stage. And, you know, that thing was crazy because it's the first tour we had to be what I would say is fully automated. So you can't have pedal boards up there, obviously.
So what do you do?
We ended up doing a fully automated fractal.
And you have a tech switching?
Yep.
Along, so they know. So they got to be
Well, the way we did it is there's a tech that runs the whole rig, but it was fully automated. What we did is in the production rehearsals, we literally programmed, I think, what were they using? Mo2, I think. But we literally, because we, you know, the whole show plays to software because it's production. And there's, you know, we don't do any like backing tracks per se, but there's perk tracks and sound effect tracks. So what we did is we basically just recorded all of our own MIDI data for the fractals.
Okay.
So what happens is now the fractals are automated along with the rest of the show. So the only thing that's happening is there's a guy running basically the whole rig. You know, he starts the program for the show, which starts the program for the fractals and the audio. And everything basically just lines up and all the patch changes happen. It was insane. It was the first time I've ever had to do that, you know, actually have sounds change while I'm playing without touching anything.
So wait a minute. So what happens? Carrie takes a break in the middle and between two songs, and she tells a story that normally was lasting 38 seconds, but now it's lasting 90 seconds.
Oh no. The show is stopped and it's stop start. So they stop everything, automation, everything stops and starts after each song. So
how's the cue? Like, what's the cue to, cause like, how does that work?
Well, there's just count-ins. So basically, and what we did is our musical director did what's called audibles. So what he would do is he knows Carrie well enough to know when she's kind of wrapping up what she's talking about. So he'll do an audible. And in this case, his audible literally over the in-ears and to all the techs, he would just say click. And when he says click, our guy hits the space bar for the next song, and we get the count in for the tune and
go.
Wow. Yeah. So it's all fully automated. Yeah, it was crazy because, you know, and that's the thing. It's like I've never fractal or any modeling stuff. So it was a big learning curve for all of us. But they were really cool. They knew it was going to have to go that way. So they bought, I think, 10 fractals. So five players with fractals, two apiece with full redundancy. So if one went down, you could literally throw a switch and no one would hear it.
That's great. You know, it's funny. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking that guy's got to be like, if I'm the guy pushing the space bar, you know, I'm so clumsy. I'm the guy be like hitting the space bar by accident. And then like, oh, wow. that's a pretty important job. I mean, seriously, if you're like a second lady, you know, my cat would walk on the space bar or something, you know, I'd have some wacky stuff here.
the guy that runs that is just, he literally, I was like, dude, you are literally carrying the earth on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But he, not only was he doing that, but he got to know the fractal rig so well. Every once in a while, because you're sending MIDI data changes to the fractals, every once in a while, the fractals, it's not that the fractal screwed up. It's just the fractal saying, hey, I didn't hear you tell me to shut that phaser off. So what happens is, you know, I'll be playing this really quick phaser hit that needs to shut off. And then all of a sudden I sound like Peter Frampton for the rest of the song. But what was really great is his name's Chris Castle. He's just a genius. He would catch it because he's listening to everybody. He knows everybody's parts so well. Every once in a while, because the fractals were right next to him, he would literally just reach over and do the patch change.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, he would check and see that, oh man, both fractals didn't see the change. So that I can't just switch the other one. I need to just manually move it over. And I'd literally hear this, and I'm there. And I used to, I was like, how is that happening? Like, and he finally told me, like, well, that's me. And I was like, that's you. So yeah, he is just a godsend. Like, we could not have done that production without Chris Castle. There's no way.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Hey, you moved around a lot as a kid, Sean. Was your dad in the military or something?
No, you'd think he was. No, he basically was just in cable TV industry. And back then it was kind of just blossoming, and because he was so good at it, and also he just took opportunities, man.
He was a hustler.
So he would just, if he saw another opportunity, he would go for it, man. He didn't mess around. My dad's a badass. So he would just go for it. And eventually, you know, we bumped around that much, but eventually when we got to Southern California, Huntington Beach area, because there was so much technology and industry there.
Okay.
He could keep taking all the gigs and jump around Westinghouse or whatever it was at the time. And I don't think that even exists as a cable company now. But he would just, we could just stay there. And he eventually moved into fiber optics and started his own company in Arizona.
Oh, with your brother.
Yeah, with Scotty. That's how Scott got into that. Yeah.
Cool.
That's, you'd think it was a military dad. But no, he was just going for it. You know?
Good for him.
Yeah.
What, if you're comfortable answering this rather, what was the biggest impact on you? And it doesn't necessarily be bad from moving around so much, or maybe nothing.
It honestly, I think I was so used to it, and I didn't really develop like long-term friendships because I was so shy by nature anyways. I wasn't recluse. I wasn't necessarily like a loner. But I wasn't really affected jumping from school to school. I kind of got used to it. And there was a part of me, I think, that just liked the adventure. It's like, well, what's Louisiana? What's that all about? You know? So, yeah, it didn't. I wouldn't say it really impacted me. You know, and like I said, I started developing longer term relationships in Cal, you know, when I got to Huntington because I could stay put. You know, we moved there, I guess, in 78.
You said you're shy. Are you still shy by nature now? You
consider- Very. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm okay. Like, you know, I can sit with like a guy I just met like you and have a conversation. But where I get messed up is if it's a room full of people. That's why I almost never go out. I just don't. Like, people know me, know that I just do not leave. What happens is I'll be the guy cowering in the corner if I don't know anybody.
Right.
I'm not really good at just like if someone approaches me, I'm good. But I'm really terrible at walking up and introducing myself in a situation. I'm just scared to death.
I'm shocked because like, this is really the first time we've talked. I mean, all our interactions were very easy, no stress, nothing. So, you know, there's no reason like where either one of us would be like a little, you know, sketchy or iffy, but man, I'm really shocked because you're so easy, like open. That's interesting.
Oh, wow. Thanks, man. But yeah, it's a weird thing. I've been that way since I was a kid. And honestly, that's been that has had a major impact on session work for me, because if I do show up on a session and I don't know any of these guys and they don't know me,
you're hanging back.
Yeah, I tend to get really, really quiet and what I call job focused.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm here to work, not hang.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
bad as I want to hang, it's almost like a defense mechanism because I don't know how to like break the ice with these guys. I'm just going to be the focused guitar player, and unfortunately, that comes across as, oh, this guy's not a good hang at all. You know, so
that,
all you kids,
that's
all you kids
you've
that,
had this...
that want to get into session work,
children.
That, yeah,
no,
in my most parasympathetic voice.
Yeah,
gotta hang.
That's obviously something that dissipates with familiarity, because you've been with Carrie 10 years, and I'm sure that if I asked anybody on that crew, they'd say, oh man, you know, Sean's awesome. So
well, I'm just not fast in a crowd like that at breaking the ice with somebody.
Yeah.
It takes me a second, you know?
Well, it's hard. It's not easy to do. You have to, like, the secret is not giving a shit.
You're totally right. And
for me,
you're right. No, you're totally right. Because for me, I'm such a self editor, you know, cause someone will say, you know, hey man, nice to meet you. How's it going? And what I want to say is, well, I got a hernia and I'm still sucking and breathing air, but I can't say that. So I'm like, I'm doing good, man.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. Yeah. No, I got like, I don't know, a while ago, after a lot of like deliberate work, I finally got comfortable. I was like, you know, I'm happy with me, you know, and it took a real, real long time. And once I got there, and I'm always working on being a better person, you know, I'm not like, well, I'm happy with me. So I, you know,
right.
You know, that's the final, you know, I'm always like really working hard to be better. But when I got to a stage where I was just really, you know, I had saw certain growth from X to Y over a period of time. And I was like, man, you know what? I don't give a shit if I'm going to be myself. If someone doesn't like me, that's totally cool. You know, I wasn't like resentful anymore. Like, or I was just like, man, that's totally, you know, you have that 100% right. That's totally cool. But I'm going to be me. And it's all, and I know I wasn't being a dick. So it was like, you know, I can say that with, you know, I wouldn't say confidence, but comfort, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you have to care less.
Yeah, yeah.
Bottom
and
line.
No, but that's, you know, you just have to be okay in your own space, man.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is for me. And yeah, life is, you're tempered throughout your whole life, and you're peppered with all these awesome just epiphanies.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, yeah, I'm learning. I mean, I can't believe I get on camera to do videos. Like, even that to me is like, you know, that was hard.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know?
It is hard. No, it is hard doing that.
Just being so shy about things and then all of a sudden getting on camera. And once again, yeah, you have that perception of like, oh man, these people are going to see this and just think I'm an idiot.
Well, that's, you know? That's what's hard. It's the lack of reaction. It'd be much more comfortable sitting in front of an audience where people like are deliberately, you know, overtly aware of that they think you suck, because then you can modify it or you could address it and say, hey guys, are you having a bad day? Or I'm probably having a bad, but because I've done those videos, not yours, I've done videos online for business stuff, and that's what I always was uncomfortable with. I found the lack of response, no feedback, is intimidating.
Because you
don't know if you're doing good,
right? And that's the thing, it's like, for the most part, like with my channel, people have just been so sweet and so appreciative of not only like the playing content, but just I'm kind of a down to earth guy. I'm not super technical. I'm not a car salesman. I just kind of say what I'm thinking. I'll just, you know, especially when it comes to the equipment and how it sounds. And I just thought, man, people are just going to think I'm an idiot with my perspective. It's going to be stupid. And that's, it has been confidence building for me, just for people to say, hey, that really helped me. Like that thing you said about, you know, understanding gain stages and how you properly set up a gain stage. You know, I remember, you know, thinking, oh God, either nobody's going to get that or they're going to think I'm an idiot and completely disagree. And to have people say, man, that really helped me. I love that because then I light up. It's like, oh man, it's like I'm actually helping people. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, it's interesting because I watch, I'm not a technical guy. I like, you know, car, I know how to put the key in, you know, amp, guitar, I'm like, you know, a Luddite. But I watch your videos and I said, the one thing I, because I know what goes on to make content. I think you're very well prepared, and I know the effort that's, you know, goes, you know, you didn't read a paragraph and then get on it. You know, I know how much is involved. So I just thought you're extremely well prepared. Well, you know, you are doing the audience a service when you're coming on there because you're coming on there armed, you know, locked and loaded, man. You got all this stuff there, you know, not arrogant at all. Very down to earth, as you said, but it's just good content. You know, very well thought out. So you could tell.
Thanks.
That, yeah, man, you could tell that.
Thanks, sure. Craig. I mean, the main thing I guess I'll say to that is the one thing I will never do, or at least make try to never do, is be discovering my product on camera.
Oh yeah, because that's
it just doesn't come across right. Because for me, it's like, you know, this isn't, you know, there's a difference between a demo of a product and a review of a product. What I do is I demo the product. So I don't fluff the product. I don't make the product sound better than it is. Mm. I basically what I do is I turn it on and I make sure I understand it really well.
Right.
That's so I can explain this is what it does.
Yeah.
If I'm discovering it like, whoa, that got a lot louder. It's like, well, that's not going to help me and it's not going to help the people that are watching the content and it's certainly not going to help the product.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You have a responsibility there and you're honoring it, man. So, Sean, you know, we all pay some kind of tuition in our careers, no matter what we're doing. And I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to maybe share one or two mistakes that you thought you made along your journey and what were the lessons you learned from the mistakes?
I think the biggest mistake for me, and it's still something I'm dealing with now, is just a huge lack of confidence as a guitar player. I had so many opportunities when I was younger to be a part of things that were huge, you know, with major artists, and because I just didn't have the confidence, I couldn't deal with the anxiety of it. I would just kind of weasel my way out of it, you know.
Interesting.
And I think to a degree I still do that, but that I think that's been the most detrimental thing to my career. The number one thing has been that, just not being self-confident enough to just go for it and know that I'd be okay. Hmm. And I've paid for it. I mean, I'm so lucky to be on the Carrie Underwood gig, and to be honest with you, you know, I was 38 when I did that. I can't believe I did that. But that was like a confidence booster for me, you know. But other than that, it's like I would, you know, 5-6 years before that, I don't think I would have done it.
Wow. First of all, thanks for sharing that and for being so real. Yeah, I think confidence is something that ebbs and flows sometimes.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm speechless because you're such a like a good player and a just a quality person. So I was surprised that was your answer. But I mean, everybody, I got my own demons, you know, believe me, maybe that's just your demon or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Yeah.
That demon's a booger.
They all are, you know, everybody's, you know, someone, you know, the old expression, you could throw your troubles and, you know, your demons in the pot, you're going to pull back your own.
Yeah,
when it comes down to it, but interesting. Let's look at the flip side of this. What are one or two things that you did at the time that were like, and I, for example, Carrie's a great one that were out of your comfort zone, but hindsight 2020, they were great.
Probably, and I still even deal with this with Carrie. Probably being brave enough to just go play like an acoustic guitar with a singer. The first time I did that was with Crystal Lewis. She had kind of a hit. There was a hit called Only Fools. And it was basically just me and her, even on the session, just acoustic guitar and her. She wanted to start just doing shows just she and I once in a while. And I remember that scared me to death. I was like, oh, no. It's no. And for me, it's like, I'm not going to tank your show. And, you know, it's like, it's so important to me that you come across, you know. But it was that, you know, that was one of those things I just knew I had to put on my big boy pants and just do it. But I don't know, when it comes to guitar, you know, it's tough for me, Craig. I mean, life's tough for me is I feel like my life began when I married my wife. So if I could pick something that I did right, really right,
yeah,
was hanging on to her and not letting her go. But yeah, on the guitar side, I mean, that it's all just kind of confidence stuff, you know. And a lot of it, I just got lucky, man. Like, I got lucky because I could spend enough time with a guy like James Raymond to hit it off with him.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't have to have that instant rapport like you do in a lot of musical situations. We just kind of hung out and got to know each other. So I consider myself extremely lucky, really, really lucky.
So I feel 100% exactly the same way about my decision to hook up with Ann. How did you guys meet? Let's talk about that.
I was out with my buddy Bert Sanchez. Gosh, I miss that guy. I haven't seen him in a long time. But I was out with him. We were just cruising around, being, you know, dudes. and yeah, at the time, what's hilarious is that's back when people still had pagers. yeah.
So beepers.
Stinking beepers, man. And so he kept getting beeped. Like, he was like, "Oh man, dude, would you mind, like, these girls? They're friends of mine. They keep wanting to hang out. If we just go say hey." And, you know, for me, I was like, dude, I just want to go out and have some beers, man. And
this was, you're in your mid 20s, 25,
yeah, I was probably 26, I think.
Okay.
No, it was probably 25. I don't know. I'm terrible at the math. 25, 26. But yeah, I just want to go out and have some beers. And he finally convinced me, long story short, to meet him at a place called the Huntington Beach Brewery, which is over there by the Huntington Beach Pier. And we finally got out of the truck and we're walking up the stairs, and these two girls come down, and the one behind the first one is this really cute redhead girl. And I just kind of was like, oh, who is that? And little did I know that was going to be my wife of 22 years.
How cool is that, man?
Yeah, I instantly adored her. And I think we were together for maybe 8 or 9 months and got married. And what's funny is we laugh about it. I never proposed to her.
Oh, you didn't?
No, man. We just knew we were going to get married. So we picked the date. And then it was like, I remember after we got married, I was like, there was never an official, like, even proposal. We just knew that we were going to get married, man. It's crazy. And yeah, we did it really simple, man. We just eloped. We went to Monterey, the two of us and a pastor, a friend of mine, a really great guy. And yeah, we just got married there on the beach and done.
Yeah, we did the same thing. We eloped. We went to Hawaii.
Just nice.
The thing there, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really cool story, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk gear for a minute.
Yeah.
I see you with a lot of Suhr guitars, S-U-H-R, for anybody who doesn't know Suhr guitars. What's your go-to guitar now, and maybe what other two guitars would round out your top three?
Yeah, well, it's a tough one. Like, go-to guitars that's a tough one for me because they're all such kind of just tools. When people say, well, what's your favorite guitar? It's like, well, it's the one that fits the track I'm trying to do.
Okay, forget it. let's pull tool out of the box. Let's call it favorite being, you know, you just want to play guitar.
Gotcha. Well, there's three of them, and If I'm just going to pick up a guitar, I tend to lean towards Stratocasters. Probably the first one I would pick up is, I've got this, the gold guitar. I don't know if you can see it on
the
camera.
Yeah, it's PRS, it looks like.
No, the one below it, the Stratocaster.
Oh, no, I can't see that. Okay.
Okay, yeah, that one, that's an LSL Strat with a Filtertron in the back.
Okay.
That guitar's just got all kinds of mojo. It doesn't fit everything, but I tend to pick that one up first when I just want to play.
Hold on 1 second. So the LSL, is that a new, I've only heard of them like in the last year. Is that a new brand or have they been around a long time?
Well, yeah, they've been around for quite a while. I just think, you know, Lance Lerner, he's such a sweetheart. He's the owner and builder of the guitars. And I remember when I first, the black LSL that I have over there, Strat, when I got it, I was like, why don't more people know about these guitars? And I realized that they just really didn't have a lot of internet coverage. That just, Lance wasn't from that world. But now that he's in the last maybe a year or so, he's got a guy that's made him quite a bit more prolific on the web.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, because he builds really killer. They're great, great guitars. What I like about them is they've got this total vintage feel and vibe, but the playability's there without being totally like clinically right. It's like there's still some vintage quirks there that I really dig. And that's, that one, that LSL, the gold one, would be kind of maybe the first one I pick up. And then after that, I'd probably pick up the white Sur, the classic,
so
with the hump in the back.
Compare, and I know, and I'm not looking for you to disparage Sur versus LSL, but if for the average person, player listening to this, if they're saying, man, do I get a Sur, do I get an LSL, the correct answer is go play them. But what are the differences?
They're both like really well crafted instruments, and they're really lovingly built. I would say the thing with the Sur is it's definitely got a vintage vibe, but it's much more, I would say, modern in feel to like an LSL. Like my Sur has a compound radius neck,
right?
Whereas the LSL, I think that one's just a 12, and I think my black LSL is a 10 radius, so it's not super vintage radius, but it's a set radius. Whereas the Sur's compound radius, so you're not going to have any issues bending a note ever. It's going to intonate flawlessly right out of the case. I mean, the main thing, I think that's what it is, Craig, is when I really want to just kind of have a little bit more of a vintage feel on a guitar, I feel like I need to wrangle a little bit, then I grab the LSLs. The Sur is like a confidence guitar for me because I just know that thing's going to be right. Like if I just show up with that guitar or just the PRS gold one, the DGT, if I just show up with those, I'm not going to have any issues. I'm not going to have any problems.
And the Sur, what is that, the pro they just called it?
Yeah, that's the classic pro. Yeah. So it's not like the upper end, but
That's a great value. I cannot believe that guitar is only like $2,100.
Yeah. Oh, it's insane for the money. Yeah. It's really, really just amazing guitar. And not even for the money. It's just that's icing on the cake. It's like, oh, yeah. And by the way, it's not a $3,500.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, because a buddy of mine is just getting into guitars and he showed me the Sur and I was like, the pro. And I'm like, holy shit. Because I was telling him, look, you know, he wants to buy a Strat. I said, look, you can't go wrong buying a Fender American Standard Strat. It's going to feel good. Then he shows me a Sur and it's $2,150. I'm like, dude, buy that for $700, for $600 more, man. Oh my God. Okay. I'm sorry, Sean. LSL, Sur, and then the PRS. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm just going to pick up a guitar, you know, because. And then the rest of it just depends on what I'm doing. Like, I love that Collings 335. That thing is a beast. It's such a great guitar. But I think at heart, I'm a Stratocaster guy.
Yeah.
You know, so I tend to reach for Strats.
Fair enough, man. Tell me the story about the McAllister. You said there's a good story behind
that. Oh, yeah. Well, that goes back to Dave. And I guess enough time's gone by that I can – because I used to not want to talk about it because it just – and honestly, this is the first time I've really talked much about David Crosby because I just never wanted to feel like it was this big name dropping deal. It's like he's someone I met that's a really, really sweet guy, but that guitar, what had happened was I had just moved to Arizona and sold everything. And before I moved out there, I was just hanging out with David on it. It was just, once again, it was just kind of a custom session with James. And he caught wind of the fact that I had sold everything. You know, Olson's gone, the Collings is gone. You know, because I'm trying to make ends meet and I'm winding down. So I get a call from James. And, you know, he was really funny. He's like, hey, moron, you left a guitar out here. And I'm like, what? I didn't leave any guitars anywhere. He's like, yeah, you did. And, you know, and I was still kind of bouncing back and forth from Arizona. I would just drive to California because it's only like 6 hours. Hmm. He's like, so the next time you come out here, you need to get it. You know, I'm like, okay, I don't know what you're talking about. So when I get out there, what had happened was David had this Roy McAllister guitar ready to go for me.
You're kidding me.
And he gave it to me.
Oh, man.
And it was kind of and it was Roy as well. They both were just really, really sweet. When I got it, these guitars, you're lucky to get a McAllister for $7,000. Really lucky.
Wow. That act of somebody doing that is such kind.
Yeah.
Dude, that's huge. What you need to think about when you're having a confidence bout, because people don't do that for assholes.
Wow, man. And that's the thing, is it was huge kindness, because I called Roy because I couldn't get Dave yet, but I called Roy and I was just telling him, God, thank you so much. And he's such a sweet guy. His answer was, these guitars go where they're supposed to go, man. And this one goes to you.
That is freaking cool. That is such thank you for sharing that story, man. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah, it's really sweet. So I that's a highly, highly cherished instrument. And of course David was kind of the same way. He's like, look, man, there was a need, and now you have a McAllister.
Awesome.
And it's a stupid guitar. Oh my God, is it a good guitar?
Man, what a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that, man.
Sure, man.
Okay, let's switch gears back to you now. Something or someone you miss from your childhood?
Say something or someone I miss?
Yeah, something or someone you miss from your childhood.
There's all kinds of stuff I would miss from my childhood. You know what, man? I miss my, especially on my side. I mean, I miss all my grandparents, but I miss my grandfather on my dad's side. I miss him. He was awesome. It's just people that have passed away, Craig. Sure. There's friends that I've had that have, passed away and things of that. There's stuff like that, for sure.
Happiest moment in your life so far?
Oh yeah, that goes back to Melissa.
Yeah, I figure you say that, and I'm assuming, I'm assuming if I said most important person in your life, you say her too, right?
Absolutely.
You want to hear a funny story? Maybe half the time I ask that question, you're in your studio and we've just been talking for like an hour and a half with no interruptions. Half the time I ask that question, the wife walks through and she never how often does your wife even come in your studio? Probably never, right? So it's the same. And all of a sudden the wife pops in. It's almost like some weird karma is going on, to remind the dude, you better answer this question right. Really funny. It's happened on several occasions, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Most important thing your dad taught you?
It's something I should have learned is my dad was always so confident. He was always like, man, just go for it. Because that was my dad. He's an entrepreneur. He's one of those guys. He was fake it till you make it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so confident. And that's the one thing that I think he tried so hard to instill in me, and I still don't have it.
Man, but you probably have it more than you think, and you probably don't give yourself the credit. I've got to believe that you're probably— Due to lack of confidence. Ba-dum-bum.
You got a lack of confidence about your confidence,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you need to have more confidence about your lack of confidence. Most important thing your mom taught you?
This is kindness, especially just, like I said, I don't know how that woman survived us.
Three teenage boys, man.
Yeah, but she's just a very tempered, sweet lady.
That's cool. You get to see your folks a lot?
Not as much, man. And they're getting up there. I think Pops is 75 now and Mom's, I think, 72. They're out in Arizona, so it's just been harder for us to get together. They may come out here, but I haven't seen them to give them a hug or anything for a year and a half almost now.
Oh, that's tough. Long time.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, they're getting up there. I mean, they're both solid, health-wise, but anything can happen. It really kind of scares me that I haven't seen them,
Go visit.
I need to. But then it just boils down to when I have the money, I don't have the time. And when I have the time, I don't have the money.
Man, just get in the car on a Friday and go out there by yourself and come back on Sunday.
That's true. I could just do the 3-day, just drive out.
What's your superpower, Sean? Your confidence.
My fingernails. No, I don't know. You mean as just as a player or?
Tell me both. As a player and as a human.
As a player, I mean, I think the one thing I can. And it kind of, it's weird because it kind of doesn't go in parallel very well with the lack of confidence thing. But sometimes as a player, I can finally just shut everything off and just play anything. It's just, unfortunately, it doesn't happen very often. But when it does, I'm just never happier.
Awesome.
When I can do that. If that's a superpower, I just wish I could get it to happen more often, because I'm just a hell of a lot happier as a guitar player when I can get out of my head. Every once in a while I can do it. So if I don't quite have that superpower, but every once in a while it hits, and that's the one I want to hone.
What about as a person? What's your superpower?
I don't really have one, man. I am ridiculously shy, but if someone will kind of give me the time to hang out with them, you know, I'm a pretty genuine dude. You know,
I'd say you're a very genuine guy.
Well, I appreciate that. But yeah, I don't really have a superpower per se. You know, I try to be genuine and honest and not try to sell myself as anything, but I'm just dude.
Do you drink once in a while? Like, you have a drink once in a while?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So next month I may be coming to Nashville and we'll go have some drinks and we'll figure out your superpower.
Well, that's usually how it comes out. It's a couple glasses first, you know? I'm all hot rotted up.
We'll have all the answers within an hour or two.
Easily. 15 minutes.
Any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Not really. I mean, I really dig. Well, there were some things I was really into, and I still do it. Like, I'm really into tobacco pipes.
Interesting.
Yeah, at one point I had a collection of about 100 of them.
Cool.
Yeah, and I loved them. I finally came to my senses. Like, you idiot, what are you doing with all of these? They're so expensive. So I sold them. I finally sold them all, but about 6 of them.
And you bought a couple of guitars.
Yeah. Actually, you know, just paid off the credit. Paid off the credit cards I used to buy the dang things. Is what I did.
That's funny. Do you still smoke a pipe? Because, man, I smoke cigars, man. We can go sit down and I'll smoke a cigar. You can smoke a pipe, man.
Oh, that's great.
Or I can bring you a cigar and you can let me try a pipe, because I've never tried one. I've always wanted to, man. That
looks like an enjoyable thing to do. It is. I mean, because I really like cigars. It's just with a pipe, there's really an art form to smoking a pipe. What's great about a cigar is you can just light that thing up. And as long as you don't smoke it like a drug addict, you're gonna enjoy it. You won't get sick. With a pipe, you really do. There's an art form to putting the tobacco in the bowl and tamping it properly and lighting it and then keeping it lit without overheating the bowl. But I think that's what I fell in love with, was just the methodical process of it. And also, they're just beautiful. Briarwood is just gorgeous wood. And when you get around guys that really know how to cut that stuff, they really are a work of art, like an acoustic guitar would be.
Wow, I'm as graceful as like someone with three left hands, so I don't necessarily think the pipe thing would be for me, but it looks really cool. I like smoking a cigar because I can't remember the last time I just sat and smoked a whole cigar for an hour or two, but it forces me to do nothing, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I like about it. So like, I'll do it when I smoke, take the dog out or something, you know. It'll last me a couple of days, but I need to sit and chill with a cigar more. I'll do that when I come up to Nashville.
Yeah, man, for sure. I mean, it's cathartic. I mean,
especially
for me, when I smoke a pipe, I'm more focused cathartic. On. Yeah, I can kind of just shut. I kind of shut things off, and really, I'm just kind of focusing on just having a really great smoke.
Yeah, you know? Man. Yeah, I totally agree. It's cathartic. That's exactly how I put it. It's really unwinding and renewing. Favorite place you've traveled, man? You've been all over.
Oh wow, I really loved Singapore.
Interesting.
Yeah, Singapore is beautiful. I love Scotland. Ireland, crazy. I mean, I love London, but I mean, if I had to pick one, Singapore was just, I loved it. I saw what a great hang.
You know, that's their culture is really interesting because they're extremely entrepreneurial, extremely, you know, and they encourage young kids to be, you know, entrepreneurs at a young age, and they all take care of their parents. It's like a, you know, little bit more together than we are here in the States. You know, I guess it's the price we pay for such independence. You know.
Right. Yeah. But you know, I totally get what you mean. It's really kind of hard to explain, Craig, why I just felt so at home there. It's like I'm so far from home, but this isn't tripping me out. I really like this, you know.
You ever been someplace, not to knock the place, but you just felt totally out of sorts there? Like I need to get out of here or something.
No, not really. I mean, there's parts of the United States I don't like, that's for sure. But but yeah, overseas, man, I not really, because you know, like Australia, Sydney, I loved. There really wasn't. I guess, you know what, man, and this is not disparaging Canada at all, because I love Canada. Vancouver is insane, but yeah, I guess the first time I went to Canada, it was Calgary.
That's out west, isn't it? It's pretty far.
Yeah, and I felt out of sorts there.
Interesting.
And I think Canada kind of throws me for a loop because it's so American still to me. It's so westernized, but it's Canada, you know. But then you hear someone speaking French Canadian, and it'll kind of toss you, you know, because you feel like you're still in the States, man. It's like, you know, but even Canada, like I said, Vancouver is like the Newport Beach of California. It's like, sign me up.
That's cool. You know, it's really a trip. My wife's from the UK, and when we first started dating back in, like, I don't know, maybe 93 or 94, I went over there. And what was a real trip for me was I went over to a guy, and I asked him directions in the subway. And it was an Oriental guy, a Chinese guy. And he started talking, and he had an English accent. And it was so – growing up, I'm from New York City, where – you know, there's millions of Asian people and they all have Asian accents. So it was so weird. It was like the words and the music didn't match because this guy's talking to me and I'm just trying to process what he's saying because he's got an English accent. So it just, and he's Asian, and it was just really a trip for me to that was not a combo of the millions of combos I've seen growing up in New York. That was not one of them, an English accent with an Asian. So it was, that was a trip.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the one thing I love is all those eclectic cultures, and that's one thing that you get more, I think, in the States is just that culture melding. You know, it's just so amazing. You know, so cool.
Yeah, it's probably the thing I'm most grateful for growing up in New York. That being around, you know, I interacted with every race, creed, and culture, and I'm.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, nothing's foreign to me. Nothing's uncomfortable to me. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Favorite and least favorite part of your job?
Well, it's always anxiety based. My favorite thing is when, you know, and this would be based on like playing for Kerry. The anxiety part of it, like my favorite thing is when we get a show like honed in, like a production, and we're ready to start performing and now it's comfort zone. It's like you can still step out of your box and do some crazy stuff, but for the most part it's like comfort zone and you're really settled in and you know you're just gonna kill it. That's my favorite part. The anxiety part is as amazing as she is and it's based on anxiety is when they're like, okay, Sean, it's just you and Kerry. Then it's like, oh God, here we go.
The solo thinking. Yeah, that's wild because you've done it so many times. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I just did a thing with her 3 days ago. I had to learn 8 songs. And I literally had to run to the toilet like 3 times.
That's because you're 49. That has nothing to do with anxiety.
That could be it. That's true. 49, man. You got to back up on the prunes. But yeah, I guess, you know, and it's because I don't really have a least favorite with music, but I would say anxiety based. I mean, with YouTube, doing that stuff, I don't really, you know, because It's everybody pretty much lets me do my thing. It's like they basically send me the product and go, okay, let us know when the video's up.
Sure.
And like I said, I love that because knowing that I've hopefully educated somebody or somehow helped them is so great. I mean, I guess the part that I kind of hate is the editing.
I was going to say editing. I was just about to say got to be editing because
it's a lot of editing.
It's a lot of work. Editing is, you know, I write sales letters and people say, oh, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm a very good copywriter. And people say, man, that looks so easy. And I'm like, the easier it looks, the harder it was. But the writing is not hard. It's the editing. It's, you know, writing is like, you know, vomiting all over a page. That's easy. But man, the edit, that's a bitch.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, like when I do what I would consider a full format video, the type of videos that most guys have seen me do, I mean, that's at the minimum. If I'm just hauling ass, I'll get that done in 3 days.
Right. It's a lot of work. Yeah. People don't. I know how much work goes into those. That's why I said, man, you're very well prepared. I know that didn't just like roll off a log and happen to spit those words out of your mouth.
No.
Hey, any regrets as far as like, is there anything if you can go back and you do anything either in business or personal life, anything different?
The only thing I would have done differently, but now looking at where I am in my life, maybe not. But yeah, I should have taken the opportunities that were tossed in front of me when I was younger to be out with, you know, acts that were big. That's a big regret. But at the same time, you know, I might not have met Melissa. I wouldn't have my daughters that I adore. So, you know, from a business perspective, yeah, that's a regret. From a life perspective, maybe that's how it was supposed to be.
Yeah. I always look at my life as the measure. You know, and I've had a pretty tough life at times, but I would not change. In fact, I do it 10 times tougher to just as long as I made sure I connected with my wife, because that's been such a major impact for me. And I'm so lucky and grateful for that. So I know that. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's awesome, Craig.
Three more questions. Toughest decision you've ever had to make or hardest thing you've ever had to do? Besides this call.
No, man. that honestly, you know, from a gigging perspective, the toughest decision was saying yes to that, having 3 days to get ready for that already existing tour. That was really tough because I think I was honestly shaking my head no at Mark when I said yes.
I'm blown away by how much, you know, what you did, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just phenomenal. It's just the amount of work you did in that period of time.
It was crazy. And awesome. Honestly, I was, even when I was flying home, knowing I had to learn this stuff, I was praying that they would change their mind and come to their senses. I really was.
You know what? Sometimes things are just meant to be, man.
Things are just meant to be.
Serendipity. It has a lot to do with success sometimes. You know, what the universe has got in store for you sometimes has a lot more than what you think you got in store for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything you're looking forward to in the future, either musically, professionally, or personally?
Professionally, I mean, I really do want to see if I can have a little bit more of a go at this, the YouTube thing I'm trying to create. I want to see if I can actually turn that into a career.
Good.
You know, see if I can get that to climb. And, you know, because, you know, Carrie takes quite a bit of time off, you know, a year to 2 years off between tours. And that's difficult. You know, it's she's very gracious to always have me back for the next tour. But it's a lot of downtime for me. I don't have, and I'm not on salary or, you know, retained. So at some point, you know, it's like I do need to focus on, you know, putting bricks in my house, so to say. And yeah, I would, you know, I'm excited for that future. And even that's been a confidence thing, you know, where I have to just be confident enough to keep plugging away at it and build subscribers and get it to a point where it's actually monetizing well. And then in life, you know, it's like, God, my kids are going to be taking off on me. It's like my 17-year-old, she's a senior in high school. She wants to go to an art school in Atlanta. You know, and I'm so excited for her and to see, because she's so talented. So I'm excited for things like that, but it's bittersweet because she's going to take off on me.
Well, that's good that it was bittersweet. When my kids were leaving, we were like cheering, you know. I mean, they were just such a handful. I'm like, and now it's like we got one left. It's like we're on the 10-yard line is how we feel. It's just like,
right.
Please, let's just get through the next 10 yards and score.
right. Yeah. Well, it's and I think everybody's like thing is different. Like with my girls, because they're both, and you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm a proud dad. It's like they're both so brilliant.
That's awesome.
I mean, they just kill it at school. They're self-motivated. You know, it's like they're so easy.
That's great.
You know, so for us, it's like Melissa and I are going to be. It's going to be trippy when they both take off.
Oh, but let me tell you this. It's good that you guys get along, because I remember sitting down with Ann, like, because my sons are 27, 25. They've been out of the house for a few years, and Sam's 17, but she does her own thing now. She drives, and she's not here much. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe like a year after or 6 months after my second son left. Actually, the little one left first, and the big one finally, thank God, left. it's just work. Anyway, so we were sitting down there and having breakfast like on a Sunday, and I said, you know, I really could see why people split now, because there's nothing going on. It's me and you in this room. There's no responsibility anymore. There's no stuff to do. There's nobody in the background. And mm-hmm. I could really see how, like, if you don't like that person, that's mm-hmm. like, it's got to be like, you know, skin crawling, you know, you want to get the hell out of there. And I felt, you know, very grateful that, you know, we have that good connection. That's not us, but it was plainly evident, and it'll be plainly evident to you as your kids, you know, leave the nest, like, wow, you know, the empty nester kind of thing. It hits you home.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, Melissa and I, we still try to make sure we do date nights and really connect. Just as, you know, a couple that's in love and not always have our kids be the only glue that binds us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's still going to be like, it's going to be interesting when both those kiddos are gone to like, it'll just be us, you know?
Yeah. I think that's one of the decisions that we did. We always connected, did stuff like that, no matter what. Mm-hmm. 'Cause some guy told me a long time ago, is, you know, your kids are going to leave one day, so always make sure you make time for each other. And I don't know why, but I said, man, I really need to pay attention to that. And we kind of did. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. Cause that's really the crux of it, Craig, is what happens is your kids become the identity of your marriage. And that's a problem. You don't want that
because it's huge.
They're going to take off.
Yeah.
And then your marriage identity just walked out the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
totally, man. last question, Sean, and this is a fleeting, changing answer. What's your definition of happiness?
It's so funny, man. I was just talking to somebody about this, and it was funny because the way I put it, and I wouldn't put it this way, but you know, I was saying, you know, well, what is success, happiness, man? Is it because you've got, you know, you own a home and you've got a solid job, solid retirement potential, and you know the typical quintessential American thing, you know, that you think is success. And for me, I just, you know, I my happiness is based on peace, you know.
Peace is in low stress, or like world peace?
When you just be at, not so much world peace, but just being at peace as an individual, you know, it's like, and I think there's so many labels that are attached to, there's so many labels that are attached to happiness. But at the end of the day, it's like happiness has to kind of just be a state of being, or just being able to find peace in the midst of things that aren't going well. Because it's like, you know, for me, it's like, things are easier when I'm making a lot of money and things are going great, but then you go from the tall fields of wheat to the dry parched desert, and all of a sudden you're not happy anymore.
Yeah, you don't want to peg your happiness to your career.
Exactly. Because... anything that's tied to financial well-being or any of that type of stuff. And so I guess that's what I'm striving for, is to still realize, hey man, everything is okay. And even struggles with health, it's like, your happiness has to come from other things, because everything on this earth is going away. It's fleeting. Your health's going to go. Your material's going to go. The things you bought with all that money you made are going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess it's a state of just kind of mindfulness. And it's something I'm working on anyways, just to just be mindful and be in the moment I'm in, and try not to project ahead, especially project failure, and try not to ever dwell on what happened, you know, last night, much less 2 years ago. But yeah, it's, you know, the definition of happiness for me is a little bit harder to don't put, you know, the label on it, or don't define it based on a set parameter. It's got to be deeper than that. It's got to be a heartfelt thing, you know.
I agree with you. I think the mindfulness thing is important. It's something I work on, and I've really put a lot of effort into over the last year of just, like you said, no, not thinking about what's coming up next week, or you know, something that happened 3 days ago, or because 99% of the time it's just a mind fuck. It's, you know, it's not, right. It doesn't really happen the way you think it's going to happen anyway. So exactly. You wasted all this time and anxiety, and in all the time you lost in between thinking about something that didn't even exist.
Yeah. And the problem is all of that stuff is really going to affect your health. But even if you're going to look forward, it's okay to look forward, but just don't project failure.
Right. Right.
Just know that those things that are coming up are going to go well. Or even if it's something that you're you know, a bit afraid of, it's like, well, why project failure? It's like, okay, you know, that one's going to be a bit of a booger, but it's going to go well, it's going to work out, as opposed to, oh my god, that's going to be a train wreck. And you know, it's a perfect example. It's like, I still have to work on it, like talking about doing 8 songs with Carrie and being so nervous I got to run to the toilet. It's like, it's because I was projecting failure. And then I went and did the gig and killed it. So, you know, it was fine.
Man, you know what? I don't know if you could see this. I don't think my camera's on for some reason. I've been trying.
It's actually been off for a while.
Yeah, I've been trying to switch it back on. Sorry, but I have this little card, and I'll switch it back on after we say goodbye. But I keep it on my desk. I bought it up in New York. It's like a greeting card. It says, "Proceed as if success is inevitable." And I've had that on my desk for about a year now, and I look at that all day long, and it's actually helped with this mindfulness stuff thing. So yeah. I always like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important, man.
Hey, listen, you're a really, you're such a sweet guy, man. I can't thank you enough for you taking the time out. And I'm most important, I'm really happy I got to know you, because you're a really nice guy. And I want to tell people that they need to check you out online. So Sean's got an Instagram. It's called Sean Tubbs Music, and Sean spells his name with a W. So it's Shawn Tubbs, Tubbs Music on Instagram. Please check that out. And go to YouTube and just enter Sean Tubbs. Again, Shawn Tubbs. He's got an amazing YouTube channel. There's tons of good content on there. Check him out. Support him. Send him money, whatever the buttons there are, just click yes and do it. And he's an awesome guy, as you could hear. Man, thank you. I can't thank you enough. You're a really cool guy.
Oh, thank you, Craig. I really appreciate it, man.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Thanks again to Sean Tubbs for spending this time with us. I certainly appreciate it. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes. Now be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, I am out. Peace, y'all. Thanks again, Sean. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.